Window, a podcast about dining in the South and beyond. I'm Robert Moss, the author of Barbecue, the History of an American Institution.
I'm Hannah Raskin, food editor at the Post and Courier.
Today we're doing the Giving Thanks edition of the Window because Thanksgiving is upon us, and so it's traditional time to give thanks. And also lately, I think we're conscious that the last, I don't know, dozen or more episodes of the Window have all been rather depressing and dreary. You know, basically everything's falling apart. The restaurant industry's dying. You know, very, very dreary subjects, and we realize that probably it's time for a little good news. And there's got to be some things to be thankful for out there in the food world.
I don't know if I can shift this quickly, but we'll see.
You may. We'll get the spirit. We'll get a little helium going in the room here, we'll be thankful. Because as I went through and I thought about what's going on in the food world. You know, what are the things, some good news that we can share. I'll start out because I've got one that I just noticed the other day. My wife had bought some hot dogs at the grocery store, and hot dogs and buns, and we hadn't had hot dogs around the house for a while. And I remember that there always used to be this problem of the hot dog and the bun mismatch. You would have a pack of 8 hot dogs or a pack of 10 hot dogs and 8 buns, and they never matched up, and you always had extra buns left over, or you could get a 12-pack of, you know, it was
conspiracies. You keep buying more.
Yes. In fact, there's a whole, I think, Father of the Bride movie has Steve Martin flips out in a grocery store raging about the conspiracy between the bun makers and the hot dog makers, and they're all in cahoots. And I remember reading a long time ago about that. And why is that? It's essentially that, no, they're not in cahoots. It's just that they don't even talk to each other. The hot dog makers do it their way, and the bakers do it their way, and they don't really worry about the consumer. And certainly that was the case. It was the case at one point that the sort of standard hot dog was a 1.6-ounce hot dog, and you sold 10 to a pack for a pound. So you have a pound of hot dogs, 10 to a pack. But a buns, 8 pack was standard. And what I read was that it's actually just was related to the baking equipment. They had like this actual bun baking pan that cooks 4 buns to a pan. So it's natural to either have 8 to a pack. Sometimes you could see the big pack, but it was 12. It was never 10 because apparently they didn't have 5 to a five hot dog pans. But what caught my eye was that, wait a second, my buns and hot dogs actually matched up. There were 8 hot dogs and there are 8 buns. So there is some good news, which is the hot dog makers and the bun makers have finally got their acts together. They've coordinated. At least I thought they did. So I went back and did a little research to say, okay, is this really true? Has there been an effort to realignment? And the answer is yes, by and large. Now, the classic Oscar Mayer wiener package is still a 16-ounce, 10 per pack, because it's classic. That's how they used to do it. But most, touring my grocery store with a pen in hand, most of the hot dogs served were no longer 10 packs. Now, maybe this is a downside.
Wait a minute. So they're charging the same price and
only
giving you
8
buns?
I did not go through the effort of trying to see what the hot dog price was, how they've changed over time. But I will tell you this, there is something to notice, which is like the ballpark Franks, 8 per pack, but 14 ounces. So they're a little bit smaller than the 10, well, in weight, you know, they're a little bit bigger hot dogs. But
it's amazing what humans will give up for symmetry.
Yes. So you'll give up 2 ounces
of
meat.
You give up some food, give up some money. You just want it to be even.
But I want it to be even so that I'm not getting screwed on the buns that I don't want.
Yep.
It looks like the typical hot dog now is 8 francs per pack. But the packs range from 10 ounces to 14 ounces.
Okay.
So they're a little bit less. You're not getting that extra hot dog, but you know your symmetry is in line. I did note that there are some, though, like Nathan's has the original Coney Island Beef Franks, 5 per pack.
Mm.
And then, for oddly enough, the Hebrew National Beef Franks, 7 francs per pack. So there's some people in the margins now who are throwing odd numbers into the mix. But,
well, maybe it's not so odd. Maybe on their lunar calendar.
Oh, maybe
it's
something.
Hebrew.
I don't know.
We're always
there
a little
go.
Bit off.
So they have their own way of doing it. But by and large, so that's a good news. The hot dog and the buns are getting their act together.
Wait,
so
if that's the best news you can come up with, I think that
it's
just
the
goes
first
to show.
News.
All
there's,
right, let's
this word.
Bring
news.
Me something else. And
if you know, if you want to share, you think sparks a something you're thankful
I'm
for.
I'm listening.
The other is, I really think the tater tot game is getting upped in Charleston restaurants.
Okay.
And which is, you know, you don't think of tater tots, right? Yeah, that's the thing I think of as a kid. You heat in the oven on the metal tray or something like that.
I really don't like tater tots.
You don't like tater tots? Well,
no, they're so popular.
They are very, very popular.
Yep.
And they're very, very good.
That's just a fact. All right.
I wouldn't think that. Like, if you ask me, you know, but would you like tater tots as a foundation to a dish? I say no. But increasingly, there are more and more restaurants, or here in Charleston at least, that are using tater tots as a foundation, but not just tater tots with ketchup, but as like the sort of foundation for all kinds
duck
of things.
Duck confit.
Yeah, you get like duck confit on them. The Alley does like this thing with, you know, basically like a baked potato. A loaded baked potato or tater skin, so cheese, beans, onion, sour cream, all that kind of stuff. Home Team does some kind of barbecue potato tots with harissa cream on it. My favorite though is probably at On 41 up in Mount Pleasant. They do a thing called Tachos, which basically. I was talking to Paul, the manager up there, about the genesis of it, which I guess Brandon Flory came up with. They were doing nachos, and then one day they had the idea, well, we got a bunch of tater tots. Let's do the nacho preparation on tater tots. So they do it with pulled pork. They got this like chow chow and chutney, sour cream, barbecue sauce. It's just absolutely almost – you can't stop eating. They're so good.
He's claiming that he invented the tacho?
Well, no. He invented his own version of the tacho, which is like but he thought of doing it because they were already doing a nacho dish.
I see. Okay.
No, he wasn't definitely the first person to treat a tater tot like a nacho.
Right. Got it.
But
okay.
It's replacing the tortilla chip with a tater tot.
Great.
There you go. Fun story about tater tots, which I didn't realize, which is where do they come from and how long have they been around? Mm-hmm. They've actually been around since 1953.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ore-Ida Company, I think you can't really call – you can call them tachos, but you shouldn't call them tater tots on the menu because I think that would be trademarked. But there's a bunch of brothers, or the brothers named the Grigg brothers, grown up like out on the Idaho-Oregon border, which is Ore-Ida, Oregon-Idaho, growing potatoes on a farm. They're farmers with a lot of potatoes. But they bought a flash freezing plant out of bankruptcy for flash freezing things. And they were making French fries, frozen French fries at their factory. They realized though that they would take like the potato, shave it into like a rectangular block, and then run it through the machine to cut it into French fries. They had all the potato trimmings left over off the side of it, which they were selling for cattle feed. So they had this great idea. What can we do with these potatoes? I didn't realize this, that they actually take the potatoes and like mash them, add flour and seasoning. So they actually make it basically a mashed potato out of them and then extrude them through this thing with holes in them to make the little tot and then fry them.
That's cute.
So it's actually like a mash. It's actually mashed potatoes that have been turned into a tots. And the rest is history. The tater tot has been around evermore. I never really knew until I looked into it where they came from, but that was the origin of the tater tot. But now in a strange sort of wrinkle there, chefs are turning to him. I'm thankful for the tater tot. I know that you're skeptical.
I'm downright opposed.
Downright opposed to.
I don't really like
tater tots. I always say that because I've said, I can't tell you the number of times in the past year I found myself sitting there, these are really good. They don't sound like
good. All right, well, I'm happy for anyone who's happy in a restaurant.
That's something to be thankful
for. That's good. Thankful for that. All right. So one thing, if we're talking about developments in a good direction, a year ago, I'm not sure I would have said this, but I think over the last year, I've gained a new appreciation for the Instant Pot.
Instant Pot.
Yeah. And I don't know if I'm grateful for the Instant Pot because I have one and I never use them. But what's exciting about it is this year there has been a flood of cookbooks for the Instant Pot. And I'm getting the sense that people are experimenting with different kinds of foods, particularly Indian food, which they might not have made otherwise. So I think that's really cool. It's one more device to expand people's culinary horizons. But the neatest thing is something that Sherry Castle, who just put out the book on cooking Southern food in your Instant Pot, made really clear recently at a festival. She was talking how the Instant Pot, she really believes, could be the solution for feeding people in times of crisis because you can make a whole meal in there. It's essentially like how you used to have like a hot plate, whatever, but it does everything. And so the idea that this could help feed people in the wake of disasters, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is. I mean, I'll have to admit, I have not tried cooking in the Instapot, though everyone who has seems to fall in love with it and rave about it.
I'm working on it. I tried it once, and I just say I made the whole kind of the wrong kind of meal. Yeah. So I got a different set of recipes. And yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what I've liked with it so far. What I like the very best is it's great for making artichokes. It's like amazing for making artichokes. It's, you know, it's quick. It's perfect. Yeah. It's, yeah. So that worked really well.
Well, that was the thing that appealed to me most about Instapot. I hear people say how quickly you can make beans and things like that. Cause I love good beans.
Yeah.
And that is the kind of thing that if you don't plan far enough ahead of time, typically you'll have crunchy beans for dinner, which nobody wants.
So I'm
going to give that Instapot a try. But what you said actually about the diversity of foods sort of goes back to one of my lists. Cause, again, back
to tater tots and so many different
tater tots. Well, but it's, the convenience foods are changing a lot. And a while back you were talking about Tasty Bites. Mm-hmm. I think, which is like a prepackaged Indian food. And my wife shows up. Costco opened up in Mount Pleasant not too long ago.
Congratulations.
Where we live. And, you know, she, like most Mount Pleasanters, she went out there and bought far more things than you probably need, come back with the trunk full of all the things you didn't anticipate buying when you walked in. But what was surprising was how diverse the convenience foods are that she brought in. One of them was Tasty Bites, which I hadn't had before.
Yep.
Lentils in a pouch.
Yep.
And you had talked about them, and I was sort of skeptical, right?
Yeah.
But excellent.
It's
like
great.
A minute or two in the microwave.
Yeah.
And I think it makes 2 minutes in the microwave.
Yep.
But it's absolutely, all you do is open a pouch and everything. And it's really good.
Really good.
Very, really good flavors and everything else. She had like these dumplings. Mm-hmm. Chinese dumplings with sauce that, again, microwavable.
Yep.
60 seconds. There's just all sorts of stuff out there.
Absolutely.
And so I think that's something to be thankful for. If you remember back in the days when frozen convenient foods was a hungry man dinner,
right,
and that mashed potatoes that were terrible,
frozen
and the chicken,
pizza.
And frozen pizzas that never got crisp and all that. This is food that is better suited for microwaving, but also it's much more flavorful and all sorts of things. So
that's a good
definitely
one.
A good one to be thankful for. One of the other ones I'm going to say I'm thankful for is the telephone, which
nobody uses the telephone anymore.
I know. That's what I thought. Who uses the telephone anymore? This came up in – I was reading with Resy, which is an online reservation system. It's a startup that's been around for a couple of years, a competitor to OpenTable, which sort of dominates the market. They recently bought Reserve, which was another startup restaurant reservation system. And, you know, so the two of them come together. They're still fighting out. You know, OpenTable still dominates the online reservation market. But what caught my eye in that story was not so much the business news, but that two-thirds of restaurant reservations are still made on the phone, even today, which I thought was a surprising number.
Two-thirds, that's really interesting.
If you had asked me that, I would have thought surely more than 50% people are going online to make a restaurant reservation.
Well, how about that related stat that just came out about the fraction of business that Uber Eats occupies of Uber? It's something like 40%.
Oh, I didn't see that. 40%?
They're becoming a food delivery business.
I got to dig up now too, because when Uber Eats came out, I was very skeptical that this is going to work. I was like, you know.
Yeah, so I should mention, I just ordered from Uber Eats the other evening because a reader had asked me, I was speaking somewhere, and she asked about the various delivery services, because now here in Charleston, we have four.
Yep.
Of course, nationally, there are many more, but we have four here locally. So it's Postmates, Uber Eats, DoorDash, and the local company, which used to be called Quick Foxes. And
did they merge, or they just
renamed? They merged with something that's called like Out of Town, On the Town, We're Your Town. If you Google Quick Foxes, we'll take you to this, though, right?
Quick Fox is clearly good branding.
Yeah, right.
Because you remember that one.
I remember that one. So all four services. So I thought it was a really fair question she asked as to how they compare. So I decided to find out. And
did you do all of four?
I did all four at the same time. And at first, initially I wanted to order roast chicken from each one because I thought it was kind of funny. Everyone's like, why would you order chicken in a restaurant? I could have that at home. So I thought it'd be really funny to have restaurant chicken at home. But it turns out two of the services had no restaurants which offer roast chicken because two of the services deal primarily with kind of pub grub kind of restaurants. So that wasn't available to me. So I ended up, I thought, well, I'm in Charleston. I'm going to order shrimp and grits. So I ordered four shrimp and grits from four different restaurants, four different services. And my fear, it's like it was like a bad sitcom, like where you have two dates to the prom or something. Like I thought they were both going to show up at the same time. But they didn't. So, you know, I timed them to see. So I placed all my orders at 7:55 and I timed them to see who got there first. And I took the temperature. I mean, literally took the temperature of the food as it arrived. I would give a slight edge in Charleston to DoorDash. But a slight edge. They were very close in terms of time, in terms of temperature, in terms of presentation. Uber Eats was the only one that they showed up first. They don't wear any kind of uniform. They don't brand their packaging. They're very much just like, here you go. And they run.
So it's sort of like the experience of running Uber. It's like exactly. Somebody, your neighbor or somebody just brought you some food.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's very casual, but I imagine it will be extremely successful.
How does the price compare? Are they similar?
I need to add up the prices. It's a little tricky. The reason I need to go back is because many of these are still in promotional periods because they're new to the area. They appeared similar. There are some, as I recall, where they institute a tip, others in which you're given a little bit more leeway. Generally, it looks like it comes out to between, I want to say, $4 to $7 for an order. Places like Uber Eats, just like Uber,
and they do it just as a surcharge to whatever you pay the restaurant?
Surcharge, right. And so Uber Eats prices do fluctuate based on whether their driver's near there. So same thing, like you see surge pricing for an Uber. So.
And that's just part of it, I think, is because I travel so much. And then when I am home, I like to cook. So I'm not often ordering things for delivery. If I do, I'd still order pizza for delivery. It's still about the only thing I get delivered. So I haven't tried any of those yet.
But it was really interesting. Yeah, it was definitely worth doing.
So thanks for
thanks for the shrimp and grits.
Thanks for the delivery. Actually, that's a good pick for delivery because shrimp and grits holds up pretty well.
Yeah, it does. It does. But it was, again, interesting because I don't know I suppose I should follow up on this and find out. I don't know how much the delivery services instruct the restaurants regarding packaging and so on. I mean, that Uber Eats bag was like dripping all over the place. You know, I took a picture of it. It's just like kind of wet and slimy. And again, the guy was moving really fast, so I guess anything could happen. Whereas with DoorDash, it's like packaged in a lovely, you know, lovely box.
Well, I think that's just the Uber difference because the Uber doesn't really. I mean, you just in somebody's car. They may have the Uber sticker, but there's no real branding apart from that.
There's no sticker. There's nothing. Yeah, I mean, you could have picked that up anywhere. And that's the thing. It does. It also comes. And that's what I was surprised by. Only, I believe, one of the restaurants branded their order. So I was like, which is from what? Like, I had to go back to look at the menu. I was very surprised that these restaurants didn't try and, you know, cultivate any sort of loyalty at all. I don't know where this came from.
Most restaurants, it seemed like for their takeout, they have
stickers
that they close the box with, or they have something on the napkin, or they have something that will indicate where it came from.
Like, I have no idea. No idea where it came from. Okay. So it was interesting.
So we got to work on some branding out there with these things if you want loyalty.
Yep.
Yeah, I do. I think shrimp and grits are probably a better order than roast chicken. I order roast chicken out at restaurants all the time. Again, I travel a lot, so I'm off on the road. But I like roast chicken from a restaurant, even though I make it at home all the time too, because fresh out of one of those hot restaurant
I can't get my ovens, oven that hot.
Yeah, it's so crisp and like all the vegetables and things that come with it and all that. But I want it right out of the oven. I don't want it to wait for while some guy drives it across town because I feel like that skin won't be crisp anymore. Right. That's the best part is that crispy skin on the outside.
But for sure.
So I'm thankful for roasted chicken, but not necessarily delivered roasted chicken.
Yep.
I like the telephone both for calling in and calling out. My wife and I recently had our 20th wedding anniversary, and so we did it in style. Went to Charleston Grill, which I'm thankful for the Charleston Grill. Still such a wonderful restaurant.
It is.
It maintains that old elegance and service, and you feel like you're getting pampered and luxury. But the food is up to date and modern. You don't feel like you're in any kind of stuffiness at all. They really do a fine job. But that was one where also the telephone, you know, calling up and then they'll call back to confirm, and just, you know, your whole experience begins with the first phone call, and even the first phone call is delightful. So that's it's hard to be welcomed if you reserve online, even though it's very convenient,
right?
In a way that, you know, when you're talking to somebody Well, if you're talking to somebody who is properly trained and has the proper hospitality, what you want, you know.
Because
there are still restaurants you call up to get a reservation. You feel like you're really interrupting them at a time when they're busy.
Right. I got a call from the no longer Quick Foxes service when she said, I guess I'm around you somewhere. You got to help me out here.
So. Well, you pay for the hospitality, but I do really – I'm thankful for the restaurants who still have that high level of service. Because if you're going to go, you know, have a big night out, you want it to be
– Absolutely.
Pampered. Sure. But still, two-thirds of the restaurant reservations still made over the phone. Mm-hmm. That really surprised me. We'll see. I guarantee you that will continue to change as fewer and fewer people ever pick up the phone for anything anymore. But I'm still thankful for the telephone, at least when it comes for reservations. Well, I'll take you. This is what I'm thankful for. I'm curious to see because tater tots were a dud for you. But I'm thankful for something else that is a trend in the burger world, mm-hmm. which I am very much in favor of, double patty burgers. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, have we talked about double patty burgers?
I don't think so. In the past?
There was a period in restaurants all over the place where big gourmet burgers were in, and they were invariably at least 8 ounces, but many of them a lot more than that. And everyone was like using, you know, tenderloin and grinding their custom grinds with all sorts of expensive cuts of meat. And people in New York were, you know, throwing truffles on them and wrapping, you know, putting gold leaf on burgers and stuff like that, so they could see who could have a $100 burger and all that. So I think finally sanity is returning to the burger world, and I do really like the concept of a double patty burger. And they are taking off. I've been noticing them more and more. I did a little more research on this one thanks to Erin Perkins at Eater Charleston. She does her most essential burger roundups every now and again. So I went and looked. She did one back in 2015. She had the 21 most essential burgers in Charleston. Only four of them were double patty burgers. At that time, 2015. Here, just last month, she came out with 15 most essential burgers. So fewer essential burgers, but 7 out of 15. So almost half of them are double patty on that.
Do you know why that is?
I'm sure there's some reason.
There is a reason. So it may not be the only reason, but one of the big reasons is Instagram.
Because it looks better?
It looks better. I did a story. I actually just had to Google my own story called Are Two Patties Always Better Than One on a Hamburger Bun? So this ran in May.
Yeah.
And so I spoke to a number of chefs, and everyone said Instagram.
Instagram.
Yep.
I thought people just finally woke up to the fact that two patties on a burger tastes great. You get more crispiness. You don't have to, you know, you get, especially if you have double cheese on it, mm-hmm. you get more of the layers that make a cheeseburger so good, which is why I always hated about the big, thick gourmet burgers is I don't want to just have like, you know, be biting through a 6-inch slab of meat. I like all the crispy out part.
Oh, yeah. You want the crust.
So I definitely, and every time I get a double cheeseburger or mm-hmm. a thin patty, double patty burger, I always love it. It's like, oh, this is such a good burger.
So much better.
So much more pleasant than the gigantic 12-ounce, 6-inch thick patties.
Yep.
They're literally where people were serving burgers that were like softballs on a mm-hmm. bun. You couldn't even get your mouth around it. There are places that were sticking knives in the top of the burger to hold them together. If you got to stick a knife in the top, if you can't just use a toothpick, mm-hmm. then you're over the top. So I am thankful for double patty burgers, and I guess I should be thankful for Instagram for in this case.
Yep.
So Instagram, it's not all bad
for
the food world. It's bringing back the double patty burger. So thank you, Instagram. One more that was on my list. This is something recent in Charleston. I'm thankful for the credit card parking meters, which Charleston recently switched over all their parking meters to accept. I don't have any credit cards, credit cards, which is great because it literally about the only time in the last 5 years I've used change was for parking meters downtown, and I'd have a little thing in my little change holder in my car, and now I don't have to worry about that because invariably I have all this change with nothing to do with it, or I go downtown and my kids figured out early on that they could always steal change out of my car, and I go to pay for them, and all my quarters were gone. So I no longer need to carry quarters around in my pocket, and can always find if I pull into a meter, I can pay for it. I don't have to worry about it. So that's something, and particularly for – it is dining related because that's most of the time when I'm parking in a meter, it's because I'm heading to a restaurant somewhere downtown, and that's a big improvement for me.
Great.
Robert, that one's going to be controversial, I got to tell you, because it did make the parking more expensive.
Oh, did it?
Yes.
See, now, this is the interesting dynamic
They also really reduced the amount of time that you can park, and they increased parking enforcement times. Now, there's an urban planning argument for all of this, but that one's going to be a controversial one.
I guess it would be. And it's the dynamic of debit cards and change, which is I used to be hyper aware what the sales tax was because you go pay with cash, you'd have to make sure you had enough. But the debit card, and especially the credit card, if you're using that, you just sort of stick it in and you go and you don't think about it. So, yeah, you're right.
Certainly a lot more convenient.
How much more expensive it is because I didn't look. I just dipped my card in there and put in a number of hours and off I went.
Yep. Now, in theory, it's supposed to make parking more available because it's now more expensive and you can't park your car for hours at a time anymore.
And I think it depends upon the kind of parker you are. Like for me, I'm coming down to go to a restaurant. I don't do that all the time. So, it's a couple bucks every few weeks. So it's not that big a deal. Now, if I live downtown and I was going running errands and doing business and visiting people and stuff like that, I can see how that would add up a lot more quickly. All right, so I'll watch for
those emails.
So not everyone was thankful for it, but I'm thankful for the convenience at least of not having to dig around for change to park downtown.
And that is all for this edition of The Winnow. We recorded today's episode in the Grateful Podcasting Studios at the Post and Courier Building in downtown Charleston, South Carolina. If you enjoyed listening to The Winnow, help other listeners find us too. Just go to iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you access your podcasts and like us or leave a rating. The Winnow is a production of the Post and Courier and Palmetto New Media. Our producer today was the thankful J. Henry Parker. Our theme music is by the Bluestone Ramblers.
Until next time, I'm Robert Boss.
And I'm Hannah Raskin.
Now get out there and eat.